Jay Beatty, appearing on behalf of defendant Cody Engler. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Just keep an eye on the clock. It's your time to use as you choose.
Thank you. This is an interlocutory appeal from a collateral order denying a motion to dismiss plaintiff's 1983 action on the grounds of qualified immunity. The defendants moved 3 times to dismiss on the basis of qualified immunity. Each time, the court denied the motion, finding that there was an issue of fact as to whether or not the defendant's conduct constituted a violation of decedent Teresa Vaughn's claimed constitutional right to be free from state-created danger. More important to this appeal, the court stated as a matter of law on 3 occasions that the claimed constitutional right was clearly established.
May I just, before we get into the details of qualified immunity, I want to ask you a jurisdiction question and make sure I understand the posture of the case as appealed. As I understand it, you have appealed the denial of the Rule 50A motion, correct?
That's correct.
And you did not appeal the denial of the 50B motion?
It was not separately appealed.
Okay. Do you have any authority for any circuit court that has ever accepted jurisdiction on an interlocutory basis for denial of a Rule 50A motion?
No, except for the general authority under Mitchell versus Forsyth, holding that any order that denies a claim of qualified immunity is an appealable collateral order subject to this court's jurisdiction.
But go ahead.
No.
You're on your way, Judge.
No, keep going.
I was going to say, but we're really talking about a collateral order that is really, if you will, it's immunity from trial. It's not immunity from a judgment. If I look at all the cases that I look at, it's all immunity from trial. You're already in trial. You've already done all the discovery. You've already gone through all the stuff to get you there. I can't find any case, I'm like Judge McEwen, I can't find any case that would suggest to me that once you've been to trial and we have a 50A motion, that is appealable.
It's an appealable collateral order.
You say that it is, but I don't find a case that says it is. And given that collateral orders are immunity from trial, it really doesn't look like a collateral order.
Well, the Supreme Court said it's immunity from continued trial or having to appear at trial.
The Supreme Court says that this is an immunity from trial at all. In fact, they've even said it's immunity from discovery. It's immunity from going through the motion process. I read all of those cases. But I didn't see anything in there that says when you get halfway through trial, you can appeal.
There are no Ninth Circuit cases on point. The general proposition...
And there are no other circuit courts on...
There are not that I'm aware of.
So if you walk through what the Supreme Court and what the rules have said, you're on an interlocutory appeal. That order has to, one, conclusively determine the disputed question. That's not happened here, right?
I would disagree. The question is postured by the Supreme Court in Mitchell is whether or not you have to go ahead with a trial. It conclusively determines your obligation to show up when you have an absolute immunity from having to either appear at, defend, continue, or have, in this case, a second trial.
Sir, I think this would be a non-starter. The thing that, if it weren't for the mistrial that was declared, and so that's the I don't hear you talking about here in response to my colleague's questions. I mean, I still think you have there is a lot of authority when we see 50A and we don't see 50B, and I don't see anything that prevented you from appealing the 50B ruling, but then we have this odd duck here because there's a mistrial that was declared, and so now your client's facing a retrial, right?
That's correct.
So is there any authority in that posture?
No, there is no authority in a case where, as a matter of fact, the authority states that a 54B motion is necessary to preserve sufficiency of the evidence arguments. A 54B order is a separately appealable order under 28-1292. But where you already have
the... Do you mean Rule 50 or Rule 54?
I meant Rule 50.
Okay, I thought you did. I just want to make sure that we're talking the same.
Did I say Rule 54?
Yeah, no, I mean 54 is a final. Now I really got it.
Yeah, you had a final judgment, we'd be home free.
But right. I was really going to be confused. Okay, so back up and take another run at that.
There's sort of two elements of a Rule 50B motion. Uh-huh. One, it preserves your 50A motion, mm-hmm. so you can raise sufficiency of the evidence arguments. Mm-hmm. It also creates a separately appealable order. Under 28-1292.
Right.
We already have a separately appealable order here. We have a collateral order, an order by the trial court making a purely legal determination that the claimed constitutional right is clearly established. That is, under Mitchell versus Forsyth, a collateral order that's subject to immediate appeal. There's
I'm not sure that you're right. I can understand your argument. You've got to make it. But if I look at Childs versus San Diego Family Housing, our 2022 case, we said that we're to evaluate collateral order doctrine on a category-wide basis. So if I were to adopt your argument, I would be saying, from now on, every time we have a trial, and it's a trial about qualified immunity, we're going to have to stop after the plaintiff's evidence and allow an appeal.
I would say not.
Why?
Because it's a prudential matter. There's a reason for denying an interlocutory appeal in that context, because it would delay.
Well, that's what context we are now.
No, it isn't, because a mistrial has been declared.
If it's category-wide... What we've got is all 50A motions. All 50A motions come after the plaintiff's evidence has been put in. So if it's category-wide, I'm going to say then all 50A motions from now on are going to be collaterally appealable.
No.
And the only reason you're saying it isn't is because you're trying to suggest that because there was a mistrial, it's something different. But as I think Judge McEwen's questions amply said, we got no authority for that.
The authority is Mitchell versus Forsyth.
Well, I've looked at
Mitchell
that.
Mitchell v. Forsyth is a different context, and this is interlocutory appeal. One of the key points on an interlocutory appeal is that it's effectively unreviewable on appeal from a final judgment. And that's not so here, correct?
Well, the unreviewable...
Well, that's kind of a yes or no.
No, is a matter of...
It's not unreviewable, is it?
Right, but that isn't the criteria in Mitchell versus Forsyth. The reviewability in that case was really the reviewability of having your... being obligated to pursue the case through trial. The idea is that it's an absolute immunity. You shouldn't have to show up.
I think
you shouldn't have to be in trial.
Excuse me for interrupting you. We know the purpose of qualified immunity. We know we treat that type of ruling, the denial of qualified immunity, differently for all the policy reasons that you've mentioned. Supreme Court's made that very clear. That's why I was a little surprised I didn't see an appeal at the summary judgment level here. But I do read the transcript the way you read it, that the district court here in his oral ruling, I guess I don't know what the gender of this district court judge, but anyway, that the district court makes a final ruling on the purely legal question about whether the law is clearly established. And that's the type of ruling that we do take up on an interlocutory basis typically. The judge also very clearly said, but I might revisit the other part, the fact-intensive part,
yes,
about whether the constitutional tort had been committed. So the reason I think this is a non-starter, but for the mistrial, that gives me pause because we have this very well-established rule about you need to have a 50B ruling to be here. But you had a mistrial. So we're not talking about interrupting a trial. because the trial's over, you're going to have to start, and then all of the policy ramifications of not requiring a defendant to face trial if the defendant is entitled to qualified immunity come into play. I'm going to spot you all of that. I think it's a persuasive and interesting argument. I don't find authority for it elsewhere. Well, some, but I think you're right on all of that. That makes sense to me. The difficulty I have is the one that Judge Smith just mentioned, that we have discussed, right? That we have to look at these as we're looking at the type of order, this category, and that's really problematic for you, I think, because in most cases where we're looking at a 50A denial, we would be risking interrupting trials. So for me, I'm just one of three up here, but for me, that's the nub of it.
Well, and there's a backup approach to this too, and that is under FRAP 3, my argument would be that the 50A incorporates the motion for summary judgment. The parties have argued all of those issues that were essential to both the motion for summary judgment and the 50A motion.
But the difference is you went to trial. I mean, usually you get one of these motions to district court makes a determination on qualified immunity, you lose hypothetically, that's what's appealed to the court. But we don't have that here. We have a category of an order that really has no place in appealability.
Right. In the context of had there been a judgment, it's clear that the motion for summary judgment denial would have been appealable. You don't need to make a 54.
Well, frankly, you could have appealed the motion for summary judgment here.
And I think that we adequately can still argue the motion for summary judgment before this court under FRAP 3. If you look at
just a minute, it isn't appealed.
That's not appeal. You have a 50A motion. What's the mystery to me is why after these earlier rulings by the court on summary judgment, you didn't appeal that, which likely would have been appealable.
Apropos of that.
Well, I mean, is there a reason that it wasn't appealed then?
I don't know.
Because now your client has to go to trial. That's what you want to prevent.
I do not know why it was not appealed at that time.
So do you have an option now? There wasn't an appeal taken. Let me put it this way. Your client didn't appeal at summary judgment, and sometimes that's because it's pretty clear there's going to be questions of fact that are going to get in the way. But after the trial was completed, now that the court had seen all of the evidence roll out and, you know, arguably is in a much better position to rule on the prong to qualified immunity, which is what you were looking for. But there isn't an appeal from the 50B or even an amended notice of appeal. I'm trying to figure out what your options are going forward and why you couldn't renew your motion back in the trial court pre-retrial.
If it went back for retrial, we would be here again in 6 months or whatever the turnaround time would be, Your Honor.
You might be, we're kind of bound. I'm not sure you could just say, I renew a 50B because we've had a mistrial. So my question is this. If you go back, then you would come up here within an appeal framework that meets the rules. So I appreciate what you're saying. Like you think it would just be a do-over later. The problem is that we're not free to kind of make the appeals rules.
I don't think you need to. In Dupree versus Younger, the Supreme Court said you don't need to file a 50B motion to preserve a purely legal issue that arose during the trial.
That's in a different context.
It is in a different context, but it points out...
This is a collateral order context.
Right.
Let me go one further, and I want you to respond, because this is another one. Not only am I to make a categorical wide basis ruling, but under Forsyth, I'm to evaluate this collateral order at the time the order in question is issued. If I'm to evaluate this order at the time this order is issued, and I say a 50A motion is a proper collateral order, then I'm saying I have to stop the trial every time right after the evidence is presented and allow a collateral order appeal in order to issue it at the time the 50A motion is made. And that is under Forsyth. So I've got Forsyth who says, I got to do this at the time the order in question is issued. I got San Diego, which says, I've got to make a category-wide basis. And I'll be fair, I've been saying to myself, if I were in your job, what would I do? I'd have to go back and file another summary judgment. I'm not sure the court would even hear it, but I'm just saying, given the constrictions I'm under, tell me how I get around them. That's what I need you to tell me.
You conclude that a 50A motion on the issue of qualified immunity is an appealable collateral order. It is within the discretion of the court, based on prudential matters, to not hear the appeal.
Every time. So let's posit this, okay? My problem with the trial up to now, we haven't had a mistrial yet, is a jury instruction problem. It's just flat wrong. And I know if that we go through the trial with that jury instruction, my client is basically hosed. Could I appeal that on an interlocutory basis?
No, you could not. It stands on a different grounds than a qualified immunity claim.
But you see, it's not the grounds, it's the category of order. It's not, you can't infuse subject matter into category. And I think that's where we're kind of crossing in the night here, because you keep coming back to saying, well, it's qualified immunity, so it's different. That's true as to appealing a qualified immunity order in and of itself, but not under 50A. We're just having trouble because if we look at all the cases under 50A and 50B and qualified immunity, if we were to write the decision your way, we would say qualified immunity is a special category that qualifies under 50A. Would that be the rule?
Yes, and I think that's clearly the rule currently.
Okay, so I'm going to ask my question because you didn't answer it. And in fairness, I don't think we gave you a chance, but we're all trying to jump in. So I did not ask you what on remand could you renew your 50B motion. That's not my question. My question is closer to what Judge Smith was, and it is truly a question. I don't know the answer. On remand, but pre-retrial, is there something that prevents you from filing a renewed summary judgment motion to seek this prong to ruling?
No, there isn't. We could file a 12B motion or we could file a motion for summary judgment. And that would put us in front of this court again, like I said, in another 4 to 6 months. So this legal issue, again, is properly before you on a collateral order or...
Well, it's the properly before us part that we're struggling with, and I've taken you way over your time. So I'm going to stop you there, and you've answered my question. I appreciate you hanging in there. I know we're all firing questions at you. But we'll put 2 minutes on the clock when you come back, sir.
Hey, thank you.
And we're going to hear from opposing counsel. Thank you for your patience with our questions.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Nadia Dahab on behalf of the estate of Teresa Vaughn. I'm just going to dive right into the jurisdictional question. In plaintiffs and appellees' view, this court does not have appellate jurisdiction.
I think that we've covered that pretty clearly. I don't want to cut you off, but
sure.
So that we don't lose it in the shuffle, is there anything that prevents them from, because we do have strong case law also suggesting that defendants that are entitled to qualified immunity ought not have to face trial.
Sure.
And so I don't think this, on my scorecard, I don't think of this as the same as interrupting a trial, although allowing an appeal and a defendant to derail an ongoing trial would be, it strikes me as sort of catastrophically terrible precedent for us to be throwing out there. I don't put it in that category, but I do think that we are looking at a type of order. And so this is fraught. But is there something that prevents the defendants from filing either 12B6 or summary judgment so they don't have to, so they can get to that prong two ruling, especially since the court has now heard all the evidence, without having to suffer a retrial?
I don't think that there is a rule that prevents them from making that request to the district court. I think there are reasons the district court, within its authority and discretion, might not allow it because we've already been through dispositive motions and they chose mm-hmm. not to appeal mm-hmm. the order
a
denying.
A local rule that we don't know about.
But not that no, they could make that argument and plaintiff would likely take the position that they've already had their opportunity and they've chosen not to appeal it. But there's nothing that prevents them from making that request in the district court.
Well, if there's nothing that prevents them from doing it, then it will be on appeal again, regardless of what the district court does, right?
And I think one of the issues in this case.
That was a yes or no, and it does strike me as a fair question because, you know, that's expensive for everybody. So
sure, and my answer is no, it may not. And I think the reason for that is because, as I understand the district court's order here, is that there were disputed issues of fact that not only foreclosed the decision about whether there was a constitutional violation, but I think that the clearly established question turned
on. That's just simply something you appeal. I mean, if the district court said there's disputed issues of fact, you appeal that. And frankly, I'm having a tough time. That's what we have here on collateral order on qualified immunity all the time. But I'm having a tough time with that even. Because on a qualified immunity, the only reason that's allowed, it's a question of law. And so when they say disputed issues of fact, of course, that's to get out of it being a question of law. But if you're really going to have a good qualified immunity question, you're going to say, I admit everything that the plaintiff says, and they still don't win. That makes it a question of law. And that's why you come up on collateral order. We've got so much of our precedent, which is saying, no, this is a question of fact. Honest truth is, if you're going to argue the facts in the middle of a qualified immunity trial, you're going to lose. But if you take all the facts that the plaintiff suggests and says, given all they say, still don't have anything, that's a question of law, and that's something we can look at, right?
Yeah, it is.
That's why I don't think question of fact is really the right place to go. If he's going to win at all, he's got to give you all your facts. And after giving all your facts to you, he's got to say, there is nothing that was a constitutional violation or there wasn't a clearly established violation.
Sure. And I guess I would maybe push back on the premise that the defendants have given us all the facts and that they truly are accepting the facts in plaintiff's favor. As we read the briefs, I don't think the way that it's been presented in this court.
Well, they may not, but that's what they have to do.
They might be able to refine their approach.
Sure. But I don't think that changes the problem that this court has here, that defendants didn't appeal a denial of summary judgment. They may, if the court allows them to do that, they may do that later. But they didn't appeal that, and this court is faced with would be making a categorical rule that a mid-trial denial of a Rule 58 motion is appealable.
I don't think it would be a mid-trial ruling. That's my only point, and it's sort of icing on the cake. But this would be it's a funny animal because there is a mistrial that's been declared.
Yeah,
and I think it's a non-starter mid-trial. I shouldn't have opened this can of worms because I don't think I need a lot of convincing on this, but it is qualitatively different now that there's a mistrial. The rule that will allow somebody to do this without that final ruling or a final ruling on the merits, on the prong two question like we have in this transcript would be, I think, an absolute non-starter.
I understand the court's concern and the significant difference that is the fact that we have a mistrial here. Mm-hmm. I think when you go back and look at the sort of policies behind qualified immunity, it does, you know, a mistrial or not, defendants have already chosen to go to trial. And the Supreme Court has said the purpose of qualified immunity is to protect defendants from discovery in preparation for trial.
And so when you say they chose to go to trial.
They didn't decide to go to trial, but the court kind of left them choice.
They were fighting every step of the way. This is like the third time they've tried to get qualified immunity. They
chose not to appeal the denial at summary judgment.
I'll give you that.
Right? Yeah. And so once they've done that, it's a little bit hard to square with the policies behind the doctrine that, you know, when they get to a mistrial, they can later then say,
now I understand what you mean by choose to go to trial.
But, you know, there was a mistrial, but in some ways it doesn't matter because they could have gone, the trial might have finished and they might have had judgment in their favor.
Right.
And then you would be here.
Then I'd be standing here as appellant.
As appellant. Right. So it seems to me that we keep saying, well, the mistrial matters. I'm not sure the mistrial really matters. I mean, appreciate your comment on this, because it seems to me the question is a Rule 50A motion appealable as a collateral matter?
And I think you can. I think it is not, for all the reasons we've
been talking
about.
Right, because it could have been, you know, Rule 50A is today, the decision is made. We don't have a mistrial for 4 more months, let's say, in some trial.
Because we have to look at the type of order.
So is there any dispute that it's the nature of the order, not the timing, and not the time of where it intercedes in the trial? You know, mistrial and...
I don't think that there is. I think we're dealing with the same type of order. We all agree that it is the same type of order. And whether you look at it as a collateral order doctrine or the Supreme Court's decision in Unitherm, I think sort of separately says you can't – Rule 50A denials, they're just not – they're not final. They don't exist independently from a Rule 50B.
I think that's quite distinguishable, because – the ruling in that case was qualitatively quite different. We do have this transcript on a purely legal matter, but I don't mean to belabor the point. I think we've covered this pretty thoroughly. Let me just check.
Yeah.
Do you have additional questions, Judge Smith, Judge McEwen? I don't think we have additional questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We would ask that the court affirm the district court.
We got that part. Thank you. Could come right on up. We'll put 2 minutes on the clock, please. Thank you.
The curiosity here is that the motion to dismiss was made under 50A. Assuming that it had been another legal basis to dismiss at that point, let's say a motion in limine, let's say that there was a 12 motion based on the pleadings, for example, which isn't necessarily an option under federal practice, but it is often under state practice. Let's say that a case had been decided mid-trial saying that there was no state-created danger doctrine applicable to a claim involving paramedics. At that point, a defense counsel would have to stand up and say, we move for dismissal. Under federal practice, your only real option is a 50A motion. 50A and B are really geared towards dealing with questions concerning the sufficiency of the evidence to support a judgment. A defendant in the defendant's position in this case really just had a motion as a matter of law to be dismissed based on qualified immunity because the claimed constitutional right was not clearly established. When you stick that 50A label on it, it becomes fraught. If you strip that away and go, this is just a motion to dismiss based on qualified immunity, then you get into the question of whether the court should hear it, whether the court should consider an appeal at that point when the case is still pending. And I think that gets into the court's discretion. It could say, no, we're not going to hear the appeal until it's concluded.
I understand and appreciate the discretion, but I can't find it in any case or rule.
No, because this just isn't an instance that has come up. My understanding, the way I look at this case, I came in a little after the fact, is that the defense counsel believed they were on home base. They had made a motion to dismiss the case in trial and before trial based on qualified immunity. That, under Mitchell, is an appealable collateral order on the issue of qualified immunity. Qualified immunity is different. It is a privilege not to be tried or to continue trial or to have to be retried.
But you're going back to the subject matter, and I didn't hear an answer to the, you know, we have binding authority that Judge Smith has cited, but we're looking not at the subject matter, not at that this is a denial of qualified immunity, but we're looking at the type of order, that it's a Rule 50A. And what is so very problematic here.
Right. And I'm running short on time, but I think...
Actually, you're over time.
Am I over time? Mm-hmm. Okay, then I will rest.
I think our clock is confusing, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's like a stop sign, but we don't tell you...
Oh, that's right. I was...
No, but we don't tell you that, and so we ought to. So our clock is confusing.
I note that it's going the wrong way.
I know. It's the wrong way.
Thank you.
That's a clue. Okay, thank you both for your arguments. We'll take that case under advisement and go to the next case on the oral argument calendar, please.
Thank you both very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your argument.